Blog Talk Radio.
Karma time. And again, my guest host this week is Evie Sands. And you know what? Of course, I would get on the air and outside would be this siren going on. I don't know what's going on out there. How are you doing, Evie?
I'm doing great. It's so good to hear your voice again. We're on two opposite coasts, and it is Murphy's Law. You were due for that siren. You knew it, right?
I told you it was just going to happen. I mean, what's funny is the last time we did the show, and we did it with with all the guys, and they were all over the place. You were in San Diego, and I'm in New York, and the boys
in Los Angeles,
right?
They were in San Diego, right?
Right. Oh, right. That's right. You were in Los Angeles. Sorry. That's right. Well, I can't tell you how many people thought I was in Los Angeles. Or San Francisco, yeah. They all wrote to me and said, why didn't you call me? You were out here. I said, I wasn't out there. I was here. We're back in the cyberspace, you know? So that's what it is. You know, it's just crazy. Hey, listen, you know, I want you to know we have such a great guest today. And I'm excited because his father wrote some amazing, amazing songs. Things that shaped my world as I was growing up, it just made my world. And they wrote songs that I could relate to, and so.
Soundtracks of our lives,
soundtracks
for sure.
Of our lives, definitely. And we want to welcome Brett Burns to our little, to our little talk. Hello, Brett. How are you?
Hello, hello. How are you? Thank you guys so much for having me on today.
Hi, Brett.
Hello, hello.
It's so nice to talk with you. We have so much to go over. It's so exciting.
Oh, absolutely. So, I mean, let me go back for a second. Evie, as a songwriter, yourself as a singer-songwriter, what was your, thing about with all these songs, isn't it amazing? I mean, Piece of My Heart, Hang On, Sloopy, Twist and Shout,
Well, even going back to stuff like, which might have been, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, Brett, but A Little Bit of Soap was that your dad's first big hit?
Yeah, it was
with Jarmel.
First hit.
Great stuff. So when I was just, the littlest kid, I started listening to the radio seriously when I was two, and music and doing all of that. And these things, then a few years after would come on the radio, and they were just so fantastic. They just jumped out and bit me and bit everybody. And they were so enjoyable and so magical, everything about them. Just there was such a passion in them. All the performances were great, and like you said, May, it just felt like it was belonged. Shooting star. I mean, your dad was such an amazing talent. Let's be clear, we're talking about Burt Burns, the great Burt Burns.
Absolutely,
his story.
Think about it. John Lennon loved a lot of these songs. I mean, he could relate. It's just, when you have a songwriter who's been gifted, I mean, look at all the amount of songs that he had done in such a short time of his life, because he died at such a young age. It's amazing. It really is. And it's when somebody could do that, I could think, John died at 40 and he had an amazing amount of songs. Like your dad, there it is. But he's had some Piece of My Heart. I mean, when Janis did that,
And Irma Franklin, and then, and then, of course, Twist and Shout is a whole story unto itself. I mean, the great Isley Brothers. That was such a fantastic record, and as the documentary points out, which let's say again, it's Bang the Burn Story. Anyone who's listening who has not seen this, you've got to see this documentary. It's such a compelling story. Just in and of itself, it's such an enjoyable movie to watch, no matter who you are and what, how you relate to music, or if you've been in the music business or you're not, or you're a plumber or the dentist. It's fantastic. The songs, the music, amazing. All of, so much of Brett, of your dad's work in it, and just his story is so compelling. And May, like you were just saying, that really in this such a short period, and Brett, tell us if we're right, was it about like a 6-7 year period of this burst of all these fantastic things happened for your dad?
That's right. He really was this sort of late starter that had a 7-year run, and it was a meteoric run over, like, from one minute he was a starving, you know, singer-songwriter trying to make it, and then the next he was staff producer at Atlantic Records, and then 2 years later, every 2 years, something else, like, happened. Then he was, you know, he had his own record label, Bang Records, and then 2 years later he was dead. So it was a very, he knew he was going to die. He had this ticking time bomb of a heart that was driving him to do everything that he did. It was, you know, for myself, the journey of discovery, you know, has been a lot like the film itself, where I didn't really know that much about my dad growing up. You know, Paul McCartney said in his interview, like, we didn't really know who Burt was. You know, like, even Keith Richards and everybody, they didn't know. Like, they knew Burt Russell. It was kind of confusing. He had all these different names.
Oh,
but,
that's why he used different names sometimes.
That's when right.
He,
I
for his songwriting credits.
Yeah, yeah, really, I think that was something that, at some point he stopped writing as Burt Russell and started writing as Burt Burns and producing as Burt Burns, but it was a thing that, like, you know, to this day we still have to sort of say, that's the same guy, you know, that produced
the
records.
Like the pseudonym kind of thing. Even, even though in his case, that was his actual part of his name, though, correct? Was that his middle name?
Yeah, he was Bertrand Russell Burns, named after the great British secular humanist philosopher Bertrand Russell.
Oh, I love it. Oh,
that's
great. well, and just a thread back, when just bringing up Twist and Shout, how even, and of course in the documentary, in the film, how Paul McCartney mentions that, which is not uncommon, that when people become first familiar with a song, they think, especially if those artists like the Beatles, of course, who wrote their own songs, except for the early days when they did covers, they think the Beatles wrote it. Like Paul says, everyone thinks we wrote it. And then, and I love how he's and Keith, you know, in the style that only Keith could say,
right.
Just about how great. I mean, and the R&B stuff. I'm so excited because I love these records, Cry Baby.
Yeah.
Freddie Scott, I mean, these are just Solomon Burke. This is killer stuff.
Yeah, my dad was really primarily an R&B songwriter and producer. He almost only worked with black artists and acts. And, you know, it was occasional that he would work with, like, white group, like, you know, Van Morrison, them. But it was mostly, like, I don't know.
He was a guy who had soul.
Yeah, yeah, and so it was like that kind of thing, and, you know, that's why, you know, he was, like, totally driven by that passion to make that kind of, like, Latin-infused R&B that he, you know, discovered when he was in Cuba before the revolution, and sort of that whole thing became, like, major, you know, part of his music and his life, and, you know, he lived, like, that kind of Hemingway-ish character with the mob, you know, surrounding him constantly and, you know, knocking heads with, like, the heaviest guys in the New York, you know, organized crime. So, like, the whole story is, you know, you could just go off in every kind of tangent, but it's unique. It's a really unique legacy. That's the thing that I discovered. Like, first of the discovery was how obscure he was. Like, no one knew who he was. Like, nobody. I would walk around it. But once in a while, somebody would say, like, Burt Burns. Wow, I know who Burt Burns is. Wow. You know, like, it was like that kind of thing when I started. You know, I'd have somebody come up to me at a party and go, I know your dad. Hey, did you know that he was really, like, mobbed up? You know, it was like those kind of people knew him, but, you know, nobody knew. And so it was this mission of ours to, you know, to tell his story. Like, our goal was to get him into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, you know, even though we thought that would never happen, you know, because there was actually like a political, sort of thing happening there, because my dad, you know, left behind a lot of enemies.
Well, listen, I mean,
the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, as we all know, is so political anyway, and for all the people who should be in who aren't, you know, which is a separate story, and then what you're just saying, Brett, but so fantastic, right, May, that what Cassie, your sister, and you, and then all the people who wound up getting involved in the production, and your family, and your mom, you know, your late mom, to make this happen over so many years, and as such a discovery for you, who, you know, sadly you were deprived of your dad, you know, basically just starting out in life, and this legacy and discovering him through his music, like you're saying, and like all about him. This whole thing is just such a unique, just as you're saying, May. I mean, this is just a great story, and everyone has to see this documentary because it's fantastic.
Yeah, I think the documentary, because I haven't had a chance to see it, which I do, and I, you know, a lot of the documentaries now are coming out on all these different, back in the time era where it really was, you know, it was the groundwork for a lot of us, the 50s, 60s, and 70s. Those three decades are the ones that really made up the rock and roll. 80s with a hair band. But, you know, the other ones.
Yeah,
the 50s, and you start to hear these songs. I could relate because growing up, that's what I heard. And that really soothed my soul. I, you know, to compare the songs of today is very difficult to me because there's only a handful of writers. But back then, there were so many good writers and great writers like your father, and that could tell the story through the song. And every time they opened it, you know, the writing, they opened their mouth, and you just said, I relate to it. I can't relate to some of the songs. It sounds like I'm an old person, which I am, but you know what I mean? It's just, it's different. It's not the same. It's,
Well, Van Morrison says it in the film. Yeah, Van Morrison says, that my dad had a lot of soul. You don't find that in the record business nowadays. It's really one of my favorite moments in the film where he just sort of, like, you know, dishes on the contemporary scene.
Well, you know, it is because it really, as you're suggesting, if you go down the rabbit hole of really where that leads, it means so much because the passion, music people, passionate music people, not people who came from, tech and degrees and business degrees, and they just go into business. But these people were all really passionate music people, and like your dad, so soulful. So it is. You're right. You're so right that was a very telling thing, and even for people, just for fans, who the heck ever sees Van Morrison speak anywhere?
Yeah, we were really,
so that
really
in
blessed
itself
to have it.
Is pretty amazing, I think.
Yeah,
don't you think, Brett?
Yeah. I do. It was, the greatest, the greatest coup for the film was to have Van participate, because nobody was more important in my father's story than Van Morrison, and I would say that no one was more important in the Van Morrison story than Burt Burns. So, I took this approach. Wazzle, one of the stars of the film, the great Italian wrecking crew, my dad's right-hand man, he would tell these stories in the film about, what were we talking about? I went on talking about Wazzle.
What a character. What an amazing guy. And what a friend for your dad to have. So, May, this is this sort of, you know, mob-esque kind of guy who loved Burt, loved Brett's dad, and just became such a true friend to him. Isn't that right, Brett? He was like a friend of
the
angel,
the other great coup. We had a lot of coups in the film, getting Van Morrison in the film, getting Wazzle. You know, this is a guy that never, ever in his life sat for an interview. You know, he's the kind of person that doesn't talk, you know, to journalists or anybody for that matter, because, you know, like for the obvious reasons. And he's like the most legitimate, you know, kind of person like that that I ever met or anyone who ever met him ever met. So, yeah, he was like a father figure to me and my sister, and, you know, we spent, you know, decades together. You know, like first night I met him, he was sitting at a table in New York City with Dustin Hoffman. And I walk in, he's just sitting there with Dustin Hoffman in there, you know, in the old Franconia building right there next to the, you know, across the street from the Dakota. You know, that's where Wazzle lived. He was there, you know, on that day. And, you know, he was there the day that my dad died in that same building right across the street from the Dakota, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's a, you know, pretty incredible. The story just gets more weird and incredible in every direction that you take with it. If you can go down every different rabbit hole about the guy who brought soul music, like Uptown Soul, contemporary soul music from, you know, Barbara Lewis to, you know, Solomon Burke and Freddie Scott and Garnet Mims, those were all the beginnings of, you know, soul music, and then everything came after that, you know. But that New York Uptown Soul began in those Burt Burns sessions, you know, so like you could just talk.
Because the Uptown sessions, that I could feel, and that's why I, you know, I guess I relate to it, because I was raised in Spanish Harlem. So I get, you know, being Chinese, it was kind of weird because everybody thought that I grew up in Chinatown, and that's not where I'm from. So it was kind of an interesting thing to sit there and listen to these songs and sit on, you know, sit with the radio, the transistor radio, sitting attached to my ear and listening to all these great songs. Barbara Lewis, I mean, please, I love that song so much.
Baby,
you know?
I'm Yours.
Yeah, I'm Yours.
Yeah,
oh, my God.
Baby, I'm Yours. Make me your baby.
Make me your baby. Right.
Oh, my God, yes. So when did you, when you were growing up, since you didn't, you weren't around, you know, when your father had already passed away, when did you start to learn about your father and what he did, or, you know, his song?
So my mother, the great Eileen Burns, the real star of the documentary, she kept the flame alive only if in my heart and my siblings' hearts. Like, she kept this flame alive of who our dad was. You know, she would tell us stories about him, how he was a fighter. Like, there were whispers of the mob. You know, she would crawl into bed with me when I was a kid and say, you know, I never want you to think of your father as a gangster. You know, your father was not a gangster. Like, she was, like, in love with him still. You know, she never recovered from it. But she kept that flame alive. She said he was a Zionist. He loved Israel. He wanted to fight in the Six-Day War, but he couldn't because he was putting out Brown-Eyed Girl with Van Morrison. And, you know, he had a bad heart, and, you know, he was fighting Atlantic Records, and, you know, and the guy just couldn't go to Israel. But, you know, she kept these stories alive in us. And, like, I had this vague sense of who he was, but, you know, and she always said to me this one thing. She said, my children will know me through my music. This was his prediction. Like, I didn't really know what that meant until way late in life, you know, like, but she kept saying this to me. It was like a riddle that I was supposed to figure out, because I would say, what does Twist and Shout or Hang on Sloopy, you know, or I Want Candy, or, you know, I didn't really know the depth of the songs. I didn't know the Freddie Scott, you know, output, the Hoagie Lands, the Garnet Mims, the Solomon Burke. I was not really, she didn't, you know, her, she was the star of our lives. She had Paul Davis and Peebo Bryson and Brick on the charts, and she ran Bang Records, like one of the greatest women in the history of the record business. I'd say number two after Florence Greenberg, you know. You know, she was a powerhouse.
Quick stop for a minute. May, you and I have talked about this on the show and with guests, and I mean, I have in different interviews and things. Especially, it's as much as it is now, we're talking about Mad Men era. So for a woman to be able to do what your mom did in those times and under all those circumstances, what a woman.
Right,
yeah,
especially
she was.
In that setting with those guys. Because I used to know Jerry Wexler. And I've seen the Atlantic scenario back in the day, being in business. So I've seen it, and it was that's amazing that your mother even was able to do all that.
Well, she was every bit as tough a character as my father was, you know, and you know, she She could walk into a room and command, and she was very close with people like Morris Levy, for example, who was the
I know very well.
He's like the villain of the Burt Burns story. But then after my father died, you know, Morris Levy, you know, became very close to my mom, and Tommy Eboli made sure that Tommy was another star.
That's an interesting little bit right there.
Yeah, there's a lot of the story we couldn't tell in the film because we decided to end it on the day he died. There's such a huge postscript, you know, like you could just talk all day about the great covers of his songs from the Blues Brothers doing Everybody Needs Somebody to Love to Bow Wow Wow doing I Want Candy, and, you know, that's like the Burt Burns legacy.
And even Janis and his brother, that came after your dad, didn't it?
Yeah. That's the one nod to the future is that in the end credits of the film we play out Janis Joplin, the Big Brother and Holding Company.
Right, yeah. Go ahead, May.
I was just going to say, then you should start thinking about a documentary of part two with the postscript, you know?
I was thinking the same thing, yeah.
I think it'll be so amazing because I've always said we don't have enough of, you know, the three decades that I said, there are so many of the artists that are dying, that the creators that were around that you want to talk to, and they're going rapidly, and you know, and there's another postscript out there, you know, for all of us.
Yeah, we were talking about making a documentary about my mother, and she was getting really excited about, you know, sitting for interviews and telling the sort of second part of the story, and even though I was very terrified of, you know, because her story is more crazy than my father's, but true. And, I was like, you're going to tell it? Okay, you know, there we go. And Bob Sarles, my co-director, my great and brilliant co-director and editor of the film, was going to really, you know, take the reins and make it happen. And then she passed away. Like, she died so unexpectedly. She came and saw the film for the first and only time on the big screen down at the Miami Jewish Film Festival in February of last year. And, it was an amazing night. Like, you know, Dion DiMucci was in the house. And, she got a standing ovation. Yeah, I mean, it was she joined me for the Q&A. It was sold out down in Miami Beach. And then, she was like, I'm proud of you. She was one of the few times in her life she ever said that to me. She was a very tough mother, you know. But, she said it, and then we were talking about she was going to join me in Cleveland for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame screening because, my dad got in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame that year, and we were going to screen the film there. And then she had that heart attack and passed.
How old was she?
73. Yeah, she was,
She was still
very young,
really.
Yeah,
I mean, in today's world,
she lived hard, you know. She lived hard and died young, you know. That's, the best way I could say it. And she was, she lived as hard as any man ever lived, you know. And she had the respect of people like, you know, Walter Yetnikoff and Morris Levy and those people in the business. And, Clive and everybody. And, I mean, she was, in her own way, she'd be the woman that would walk in the room, and she's gorgeous, you know. She's just like, and everybody, you know, would be like, oh, here she comes, you know. And she was fearless, you know, as well. And there's stories about her that I will never tell, you know, and there, and there's some that I will tell. You know, but she was every bit the gangster that my father wasn't. You know, like, my dad wasn't a gangster. You know, he hung out with gangsters, and gangsters loved him. And he was, like, he liked going out and smashing up bootleggers with baseball bats with his friends from the, you know, the Genovese and the Westchester, mobs. So, you know, that was him. But my mom, you know, she took it to another level.
Wow. What a story. It's so compelling and so interesting, but also as Wazzel said, what is it? One of those quotes. I'm going to use the correct grammar. Don't tell anybody your business.
That's right.
Right?
Don't tell nobody your business.
Yeah, nobody your business. Right?
Yeah. He would say that. He would say, you know, crawl before you walk. You know, always cry the blues, meaning tell people you have no money. And the final one was clubs is trumps. This is like you would say this, clubs is trumps, which means, you know, the clubs obviously is a trump card in some card game, but what it really means is that when all else fails, resort to violence, use the club, you know.
Right. That's in other words, that's the final word, right?
That's the final word.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm not saying I agree with this, but, yeah, that was his you know, he had a certain way, and, you know, I never met anybody like him, and, you know, never will. It was like the last of this. He lived to be 90 years old. He sat there and would give, like, the thumbs up. We were producing a musical to Broadway called Peace of My Heart that was off-Broadway in 2014 and is heading to Broadway with a bunch of great producing partners. Stephen Van Zandt and his wife, Maureen, are producing with us, and Paul Schaefer, great Paul Schaefer, is producing the show with us. And so we're bringing it to Broadway in the aiming for the 1920 season. You know, and Wazzle is a character in the musical. He's a huge character in the musical. He's probably the big second. I mean, the guy who plays him could win a Tony nomination. You know, he's like that big of a character. He's so big that we play him twice in the musical. There's a play within the play of the older Wazzle, sort of, you know, like framing the backstory. And we've had all these great...
Oh, I love it. Beautiful.
Yeah, it's so much fun. I mean, I'm digressing, but we've had like four different sopranos playing the part of old Wazzle over the years. We had Dominic Chianese at the beginning,
right.
Uncle Junior. Then we had, you know, like it just went on. And we had Joe Saravo off-Broadway who played, you know, Tony's father in the flashback scenes.
Yes.
You know, and Vincent Pastore, Big Pussy, was in the most latest, you know, readings and workshops. So, I mean, it's really, you know, it's just that kind of great character in the musical. But, yeah, you know, Wazzle was there for us. And, you know, on his deathbed, he said, you know, you kids didn't know it, but your whole life you had the mob behind you. And, you know, he basically said, like, you know, he told us the story about Tommy Eboli, you know, saying to my father and to my mother, I'm sorry, at the funeral, you know, like to Wazzle, you take care of the wife and the kids, and it's on the record. And that was his mob speak for, you know, exactly what it sounds like. And, you know, like
you know
we...
You that's almost like in a Bronx Tale in that movie where not necessarily, like you're saying, because your dad was, or even your mom, I mean, was part of it, but kind of blessed by the angels. They just loved them, and then in turn that responsibility to make sure that you and your siblings were okay. I mean, that's starting with that great love they had for your dad.
Yeah. Tommy got machine gunned in 1972 in a big you know, sort of bust with another family, but that's a very fascinating story. Yeah, Tommy is like a big, you know, big star of the Burt Burns story, and that, you know, he was the head of the Genovese mob when, you know, my dad went up against Morris Levy in Atlantic, yeah. And so, you know, it was like a situation that just got totally out of hand, you know. Jerry Wexler pulled the trigger, and he didn't realize how heavy my dad's connections were. And, you know, that kind of created this situation that got totally out of control. And people came within an inch of their lives, I mean, quite literally, you know. And, you know, it's an amazing story, you know, like you couldn't make it up, you know. And
Absolutely. It's the kind of stuff if we're all sitting around and writing, we think, oh, people will never believe this. But I always say, I mean, you guys know, that the best material comes from real life. and it's true.
Yeah, it's true. Well, it's true.
Know,
my dad's story is... It lends itself to so many different, you know, art form, I suppose, because it's just like got the kitchen sink of all the, you know, ingredients of a, you know, of a musical or a film or a book. You know, it's just like we realized that was how we were going to get people to pay attention to the music, was to tell his dramatic life story in every medium we could find. And Joel Selvin's book was the first shot in the sort of Burns boom with, that's what the, I love this New York Times, I like to quote the New York Times, you have to forgive me, I'm like going to drop New York Times quotes on you if I can, but you know, they call it the Burns boom with, and you know, Joel's book was just like the giant counter history that, you know, we sort of needed to set the record straight, because my dad had been, you know, pretty much buried and whitewashed and blackballed from, you know, the history books. And then the musical was off Broadway, and that, you know, had a huge impact. You know, the New York Times called it gorgeously tuneful, and you know, we you know, we're heading to Broadway. And then, you know, and then the movie, the documentary was, you know, I never expected it to do what it did. You know, quite frankly, it was, you know, we you know, you get close to these things, and we knew as we were building it that we had something special. But, you know, it really turned out into, you know, something to exceed, you know, my wildest dreams.
Mm.
And
so deservedly. So, you know, what was, what is that, the 6 degrees of separation, in addition to in May, like we were saying to you, Brett, about just how much your dad's music, just the impact, you know, whenever one hears it, it's such fantastic, brilliant stuff. But the 6 degrees, so Al Gorgoni, right, who's, apart from songwriting, production, arranging, all that, was one of the great guitarists, and is, I always like to say, like Wrecking Crew East. So among other things, so he did a lot of work on stuff for your dad's label. He's the signature guitar on Brown Eyed Girl and a lot of the early Neil Diamond stuff, I mean, among other things. And Brooks Arthur, and then Brooks is an old friend of mine, because Brooks was the engineer on a good deal of my early recordings.
Wow.
So, and just in and around, I never had the pleasure, I mean, as a little kid, you know, at those years, but I never had the pleasure of ever meeting your dad. But just in and around, I think even as a little kid, I met Freddie Scott, who's amazing.
Wow.
And but just all of those things, it's just, everything in the documentary, it's so brilliant, and really, as you say, it's kind of the tip of the iceberg, because you can't keep people in a theater, I guess, for 10 hours at a time. But and kudos, as you mentioned, kudos to Bob Sarles, because he's just brilliant, the work that he did with you guys and in finally shaping all of that.
No first-time filmmaker could dream to make a film this good without somebody like Bob Sarles. And he came on as an editor, and his work was so transformative. He and his wife, Christina Keating, are actually a filmmaking partnership, and they work together on all these fantastic, you know, documentaries and Rock and Roll Hall of Fame videos. And, you know, he did the Mike Bloomfield film recently. I mean, Bob is, you know, brilliant, you know, documentary filmmaker. And you know, there's so many fathers in this film. Like Brooks Arthur is you know, really literally one of the men that have stood in the gap for me, for my dad, you know, my entire life. And he's a, you know, producer of the documentary, and was instrumental in, you know, getting Van Morrison to agree to be in the project. I mean, you know, that really validated you know, me, and you know, here we are. First time at this point, Bob Sarles was not with me. I was just like a guy who had never made a home movie that just started shooting interviews and editing. And I showed my first edit to Harvey Weinstein, believe it or not. You know, and got very close.
Well, he owned most of Hollywood at that point, I wasn't sure, so that's the place to go. And I hate to say it, you know, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Sorry, no. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I actually, when I worked at Alan Klein's office, we had this guy, Pete Bennett, who was the promo man. And Harvey, every once in a while, when I run into him, would say, "Hey, don't you remember? I used to work at Apple along with you." And I go, "You did?" And then I said, "Oh, okay." And then I found out that he was one of the interns. And that, you know, and it was like at the other end of the office, you know, so I never really saw him or really had anything to really do with him. So it's kind of interesting that, you know, he remembers, and it's all these crossing paths again. You know, here we are in another scenario. But,
I dodged a bullet there, I think, with that one, you know. But in the end, we really lucked out, because we got distributed by this brilliant New York State-based distributor, Abramarama, that put out the great Beatles doc, the Ron Howard Beatles film last year.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, those guys distributed. If you look at, like, 90% of the great music docs, their name is on it. I mean, they really have kind of, like, cornered the market and have a brilliant business model, and they're just great distributors. And we were, Sid Gannis, who's an executive producer on the project. Sid was the head of the Academy for 4 years, like 5 years or something like that. He brought us to Abramarama, and again, that was Brooks Arthur that introduced me to Sid. So Brooks, you know, I can't say enough about Brooks and his part in the film, and Sid Gannis, and but especially Bob Sarles. He really he brought all of his best people, everybody from Barry Goldberg to do, you know, sort of some underscore in certain scenes, to you know, just an array of, you know, the best filmmakers and, you know, everybody at what they do, the sound designers, everybody were just like the best people that Bob Sarles could find. And he made, you know, I mean, it's, I can't believe I can't say it because I'm just the guy in the middle, but, you know, he made a music documentary that will really stand the test of time.
Oh, it is. It's truly brilliant. Everything about it is just is perfect. And then it does, as they say, as we always want to say, it tells the story. And it just, I can't say enough about it. And again, everybody, you have to go out and see this documentary, and I can't wait to see the next the show when you have it ready.
That'll be a fun night. You guys will be at opening night on Broadway. I wish I had invited you to opening night off Broadway. That was like the best party I ever threw or have ever been to, and it was just like Benny King was there, and you know, all these like stars of our lives, and you know, Brenda Reed from the Exciters, and you know, everybody, it was just it was an amazing night. You know, we were at this little not little, but you know, the Signature Theater on 42nd Street. We were the first musical to play in on their big Irene Diamond stage, and I never experienced anything so thrilling as, you know, putting that show together. We've been doing it for 10 years. Like, we started at the New York Theater Workshop in the East Village, where Rent was born, and then we went to New York Stage and Film at Vassar, where Hamilton, you know, did their pre-Broadway work, you know, really developed it old school style. And like I said, Wazzle would be there in the corner giving the thumbs up, you know, at every turn. He really loved seeing himself on the stage. It was quite thrilling.
And you know what? I am so happy that the story is coming and then coming to life, that the new generation can actually see. Because if you think about all the songs that that are playing, like for commercial, we're talking way back when. We're not talking like present day as much as they choose all the songs and they revamp it or with a new, you know, with a new sound to it. But it's the songs of yesteryear that people relate to when they do commercials. So if you think about it.
One thing that just comes up when you say that, how about I like peanut butter, right? Like totally. You know the one I mean, right? It's just.
Like Die Like Candy type of, you're talking about,
I want candy.
Like
is the
jam. That's that one. So that's been in a commercial now. It's on every other minute on TV or somewhere. Saying, May.
Yeah, it's there because we can, again, it's what you can relate to with singing words that people remember. And, you know, you talk about, oh, yeah, it brings them back to that time frame. You know, the few artists that have nowadays that I hear that I really like are, you know, one of them comes to mind, which I think we've always said was Bruno Mars. He's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
He's an all-out entertainer, and he's not just, you know, he can sing, he can dance, and you know, he could, what he says, you can hear it. You know, so it's what you can relate to, and but the stories from way back when, look how many people. Your father's song has influence. You know, there's all those different people out there that they love hearing. I mean, John, I would always tell people, I would go up to different people that I met over the years that I know that's influenced John Lennon's music. And I would go up to them and they would say, John Lennon knew my music? And I'd say, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, cause to me, that's the biggest thrill I could ever give another singer-songwriter, you know, that that another, like, a guy like, you know, an iconic figure knew this person's song or helped work the song. Like, you know, Ann Peebles' song, I Can't Stand the Rain. People had fallen off the charts. I mean, literally fallen off the charts. Came in, I think it was 98 and fell off. And one of the people that worked for Apple came up and told John, he says, here's a good song you should listen to. It just never went very far. And it was I Can't Stand the Rain. John loved it so much that every time he would do an interview, he'd go and say, you know what? You know, here's what I'm listening to. And he kept plugging it. And the song came back on the chart, and it became number one. And we all know the song. You know, so that's how it happened.
Wow.
So, but that's how it happened. I got a note from one of the songwriters, one of the co-writers of the song, and said thank you for bringing that song back to life.
That's a wonderful story.
And you know, that's my thing. I love publishing. I love the music. I love the idea of the songwriters, what motivated them, what, you know, gave them the inspiration. So your father is one of my idols in that, you know, with all the songs he's written.
Well, there's
he really
there's a great...
wrote songs, yeah, on a different level.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it was something he wrote, autobiographical songs. That was the thing. I mean, everybody writes, every songwriter, of course, writes from their own internal experience. But my dad's songs were so deeply autobiographical. I think when he said, my children will know me through my music, he meant, like, really look into the, you know, into the music. And it's not just the lyrics, but it's the production and the whole emotional range of the song. You know, like, there was, like, he was there in his music. You know, I mean, it never really fully brought him back to life on the living stage in the musical, you know, but it's never really him, you know, like, we've ever only gotten so far into knowing him. But, I mean, we were really lucky to have been left with so many, you know, clues, and it was like an archaeological dig, you know, trying to get to it.
Well, you know, yes, you and your siblings are very fortunate, because so many people who sadly lost a mom or a dad at such an early age as you guys did, didn't have something like that, because whatever profession or whatever their mom or dad did, it wasn't that sort of thing, that kind of rabbit hole and emotional content and things that they would have to come to them in a different way. So you guys are really blessed in that way, to have something so special.
It's true. It's true. I'm always, like, counting, you know, my lucky stars for, you know, what we did, you know, because, like, the day, this is a story we didn't tell in the film, but the day he died in that hotel room, you know, right there on 72nd Street, my mother never went back to the hotel room. They were moving into a house in Tenafly, New Jersey, or we were, that very Monday. But he died, and she never went back to the hotel room. But in the room was the, you know, the family archives of video, and, you know, the most important things that you keep when you're moving, that you don't leave with the movers, you know. And all of it got thrown out onto the street, you know. Much of the legacy was lost, you know. But like you said, you know, so eloquently, was that we were able to, through the music, and then, you know, there's so many clues there. I mean, outtakes. I mean, we have Betty Harris outtakes in the film with my dad's voice. It's the only time, you know, I ever heard his spoken voice, not singing, you know, and we got to use it in the film. That was, of course, then we found all this great, same thing with Van Morrison on the Brown Eyed Girl sessions, but it was after the film was finished.
Yes.
That was good, I think.
Well, you know what, I've had some things as well where I've got to listen back to the outtakes, and then just the chatter in between, and just talking back and forth from the studio in the booth, and I think of it as the same. It's like an audio home movie, because it just the stuff, like, it's a treasure. It's a treasure, and then with your dad not here, to hear his voice like that, there's no words for that. That's what a gift.
Yeah, it really was. We were lucky. You know, I always wondered if we made the film without a single frame of video of him. Like, we could not find any of it. We have this great video that Brooks Arthur shot at Mirasound of, you know, Garnett Mims and Sweet Inspirations, you know, with Sissy Houston, who's one of the stars of the film, of course. And, you know, but no video of my dad. And so, you know, we thought about doing animations, we thought about doing reenactments, we thought about all these things, but we just, in the end, let the people who were there tell the story and just make a very sort of, you know, workmanlike, straight-up, you know, documentary with no reinventing of the wheel, so to speak, you know, like a lot of great music docs kind of are doing nowadays. Mm-hmm. And it worked, yeah.
It worked. Well, so a quick question. So the really tragedy, though, of all the stuff that, as you were just saying, that was left in the hotel room, with, of course, just the sudden shock and how unbelievably horrible that was, you know, for your mom, and you guys were so young and moving in upheaval, and then there's your dad passes away just bang like that. Do you think there was maybe some video footage and things and like archival things, as you mentioned, that you might have had that not happened that way, you know, where your mom never went back?
Oh, without a doubt in my mind, there was, there were boxes. My mother told me there were boxes of, like, video of, like, you know, that he had shot, like, home video of shots filmed from the studio, you know, like, things that you couldn't imagine. We did lose it that day. But, again, I always want to remind myself that, you know, despite that, you know, there's a lot of tragedy in my dad's story. I mean, you know, it really is a, you know, there's a, I think, at some respect, in a sense, there's a happy ending because at the end he emerged victorious, you know, like in this epic battle and walked out with the whole owner of his empire, right?
Yeah.
And kind of got off the wheel for that brief moment with his wife and his three babies. The youngest was 2 weeks old. You know, I was 2 years old. My sister was 10 months old. I mean, he had his family. He had his business. He had his legacy was, I mean, who would have known that, like, this many years later, you know, you guys would, and he would be, you know, being celebrated the way you are, you know, like, I don't think any of you really thought so at the time, right? But, you know, it's amazing. And, you know, the fact that we were able to elevate him into this pantheon, you know, through, you know, telling the story was, you know, that was the mission. You know, it was really like, how are we going to get him in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? And then Stephen Van Zandt, who I always just want to, like, you know, shout out to Stephen Van Zandt, who is, you know, like this knight in shining armor for us and, inducted my father into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. He's the narrator of the film.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to work with us on the musical on Broadway. You know, it's, I just can't say enough about having a guy like that, you know. I mean, he, you know, forced my dad into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame like, you know, like a bull in a china shop.
Yes, no. I do know what it's like.
He's another guy who's totally passionate about music and projects and things. So wonderful guy, of course, to have get involved with you. So lastly, I have a question. I'm just thinking, with everything that you've said, and the things that are on tap, you know, the sort of what next, what's next, and goals. Any more things you would think that for your father's legacy that you and your siblings have in mind or that you would love to achieve? Because what you've done is just fantastic.
Wow, thank you. It was always about getting him in the Hall of Fame, and the book, Joel Selden's book, and the documentary, and the musical off Broadway, that made that happen, you know, and Stevie made it happen, and it was, you know, but then there's a biopic in this. We've had some of the heaviest producers and actors in Hollywood and their agents, you know, trying to get the rights to make this story into a, you know, either a series or, you know, the Bobby Cannavale character in Vinyl was based on Bert Burns. I heard this from the people who made the show, you know, so, you know, yeah, it was as if Bert had, my father had lived into the early 70s and become, you know, like a, you know, a coke fiend, but, you know, that didn't happen. But the manic New York record industry character that Bobby played was based, in, you know, loosely around my dad, you know, fictitious kind of character. But, you know, there is a film about my dad, and we're going to make it one of these days after the musical, and I've always dreamt of doing a tribute concert and, you know, getting people together to sing the songs and do something really special, like, you know, in New York City at Lincoln Center, that kind of, like, big-time event, and, you know, get all of our, you know, closest friends and, you know, in the business to come together and sing a song for Bert, you know, like, there's that vision as well. But right now
that
it's really about the musical.
Great.
Yeah, that would be great. You know.
Where can people find more information about the father and all the projects? Is there a website they can go to or anything?
Yes. So we have a couple of websites. There's, of course, just BertBurns.com, and it's all E's, BertBurns. BertBurns.com is the sort of main site that, and then there's also Bang, the Bert Burns Story.com, which is the documentary. The DVD is available on the website right now exclusively, and that's has an hour of extras that have Paul McCartney and Keith Richards and Wazzle, you know, just like the greatest moments in the film that we couldn't use. That could really, truly epic stuff there. So there's a DVD on the website at bangthebertburnstory.com. There's Piece of My Heart you know, which is our musical website, and that's going to, you know, ramp up next year with the, you know, the move toward Broadway. So yeah, we're going to be telling the Burt Burns story in you know, and for years to come. I mean, it's it really is a story that just wants to be told.
And his music will, of course, live forever. So
That's right. Well, thank you, Brett, for joining us, for telling us and giving all the stuff about your father. And for people who didn't know what he had done, what the songs, they're going to know now. And everybody should go and see the documentary, including myself. And I hope I will, you know, talk and see you in New York.
I will be seeing you soon, and if not then, then opening night on Broadway. And thank you guys for shining a light on my father and the legacy and everything we're doing. This has really just been a dream come true. Thank you.
It's a pleasure talking with you and celebrating your dad's amazing life, creative life. And kudos again to you, to your whole family, for what you've been able to accomplish to bring your dad back from the unfair obscurity that he resided in to this. This is really fantastic.
Well, you'll come back when everything else starts to open up, when the play's on and the whole thing. You'll want to hear some more about it, too.
Awesome. I'll bring Steven Van Zandt and Paul Schaefer with me for that night.
I know. That'll be great, because I know Paul and I know Steve, so that'll be fun.
Great.
And then we'll connect at some point. For sure. I look forward to it.
I look forward to it as well. Thank you, guys. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Brett.
Thank you. Thank you. Bye.
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 Oh, God. Is that amazing? He was just amazing talking about all that stuff.
Oh, sensational. Mm-hmm. Really, first rate. His dad, what his dad did, his accomplishments, and then what now his family, his children were able to accomplish in bringing his dad back, you know, sort of from the terrible obscurity that he did not deserve to be in, and celebrate this amazing creativity and his songs and his life. And again, everyone should see this documentary. And then when the show comes out, you can't go wrong. I mean, it's so compelling and it's just so good.
And that's exactly it. Hey, listen, what are you up to? We only got a couple of minutes left, so tell me what you're up to. Anything interesting?
Well, yeah, so I've gotten into rehearsals. I've got some shows coming up and just heavy into writing and just getting all my songs together so I can get my next new full album going early into this next year, because, God, we're already... We're at the end of September. Can't believe that. And then some other shows, and then next year I expect as well to do a lot of touring, which, you know, we'll talk more about, like, and get back to the UK and Europe and all that good stuff. And also, of course, back to New York. But just
come back to New York. Come back to this way.
Yes. What about you? You're always busy. What fun stuff have you been up to?
I've been doing a lot of fun. I've been doing a lot of fun stuff. A little over a week ago, about a week and a half ago, I got a chance to sit down and hang out with Julian Lennon for a little bit. He was coming through town because he has an art gallery show. Well, an art. It's a photo exhibition down at the Leica Gallery show here in New York. And he had it up. I got to go and get a chance to see it. We had a lovely meal together. We were talking. We were doing things. And it was just nice to see him up and about and in New York, because he loves
wonderful
LA.
To connect again, I'm sure.
Yeah,
and
but
his work, his photos are magnificent.
Oh, aren't they? I know, they're fantastic. He has such a great eye. I'm so glad he's doing more of that. He's really so good. You know, he's doing one out in LA soon, I think, so he's getting that out there as well. So you should check that out.
I have to make sure that I can see it, because I'd love to.
Just go on to julianlennon.com and it should give you all the info on that. And then on Monday, I'm going to see Roger McGuinn and Chris Hillman, Berg.
Oh, they were out here already. That's a great show.
I'm going to see them on Monday. So that'd be great.
Where are they playing?
They're playing at Town Hall. They sold out on the Monday show, but the Sunday show, I think there's still some tickets. But the Monday show, I guess that was the original one, and that sold out. I saw Justin Hayward just recently.
Exciting, right? That was great.
Oh, yeah, he did some shows. They were sold out. He was down at City Winery. Now the other guy in the band, that small little unknown band or known band of the mood, is John Lodge. He's going to be at the City Winery October 17th, so I'm hoping to be there too. And my birthday party will be coming up shortly, and I just threw a great birthday party for my friend Wendy Kaufman. It was the 60th. She is known as the Snapple Lady. She's the original Snapple Lady.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yes.
Oh,
so
how fun.
We did an amazing 60s Woodstock. We called it Wenstock, and it was fantastic. Everybody had a lot of fun. We had a lot of people getting up and singing, and everybody in their tie-dyed shirts from back then. It was a lot of fun.
Oh, I bet.
Oh, and I'm doing Chiller. I'm going to be doing Chiller. And the Chiller Convention, the weekend of October 26th to the 28th. Yes. Those are the days from Friday to Sunday. But I'm going to cut out early on Sunday. So if anybody's coming, the Friday and the Saturday, I'll be there. And it'll be a lot.
So right around all your whole birthday world and birthday months. This is fun. This is great.
Well, it's going to be fun. You should come out.
I would love to. I think a couple of the shows that I'm going to be doing in October, I think there's a conflict right around then, like the weekends of the right around in the 20th-ish weekend and the 27th, and I think there's I think that's what it is. But we'll be in touch, and I'll make sure, of course.
We'll talk. And then on top of that, I saw Gregory Martin, who and his wife Cherie there. Gregory is the oldest son of George Martin, Sir George Martin, and he looks just like him. He sounds just like him.
Wow.
When he walks in the room, you think it's him. But so those are the things. And I got some other stuff up my sleeve, but they're too soon to talk about yet. So I got to leave that to the side. And you know what? We're down to the last minute. So I'm just going to say until the next time when we speak. And I hope everything goes well. And for everybody out there, thank you for listening. And we have Evie Sands as my guest host. And Evie, I'll be talking to you soon.
Okay, May, as always, it's a blast. We thank Brett Burns for being with us. Thanks, as May said, for listening. And me too. We'll talk more about more stuff we'll reveal next time.
Absolutely. So, adios, everyone.
Adios.